Well, the presentation is loading. I guess I'll do the disclosure thing. Neither Mark Hall nor myself have had any personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation during the past 12 months. Okay, so basically the question we're going to ask is, who will be uninsured after health reform? The numbers, how many people will be left uninsured, and what kinds of people would be uninsured? How does the composition of the uninsured change from what we currently see? And this is joint work with Mark Hall of Wake Forest, who couldn't be at this conference. Okay, so first of all, we'll talk a little bit about the simulation model that we're using to simulate the effects of health reform. And then we'll look at some of the results. First, how health insurance would affect the number of uninsured. By how much would it lower the uninsured? And what would be the income distribution of those left uninsured? And then we're going to focus on non-elderly adults who would be left uninsured. And we're going to look at their characteristics much more closely. Okay, so this presentation we'll focus on adults. Research focusing on children is forthcoming with Jenny Kenny and members of the Georgetown Center for Children and Families. The situation for children is more complicated because you have a big question mark over the future of CHIP and so on and so forth. So that picture is much more complicated. We will be focusing on adults currently. You know, for this work. Okay, so a little bit about the model. So we start out with a representative national population. You know, we take multiple years of the current population survey and pull them together so that we have enough observations for each state. So that also gives us, for example, who the uninsured are. We know their characteristics. If you're working off, say, claims data, you by definition don't know, that by definition doesn't deal with the uninsured. So then, from that basic data, we statistically add information from a number of other sources, most notably healthcare costs. And those are taken matching on detailed characteristics from the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey, and it's aligned with the National Health Expenditure Accounts and other sources. And then we draw on a large body of actuarial and econometric research to then, for every person in our observation, we estimate what their healthcare costs would be if they were uninsured, including uncompensated care, if they're covered by Medicaid, or if they're covered by various private insurance packages. Once we know their spending, we know they're spending regardless of what choice they make, and that takes into account moral hazard and so on and so forth. Once we have those choices, we can then run the behavioral model. So the behavioral model has been in development for a number of years, with the advice of more than a dozen experts in various specialties. All of these large microsimulation models are multi-year development efforts. Basically, we draw from the existing literature on employer and individual choice behavior. So the basic cycle of the simulation, so we know their costs, we know their initial choices, because that's what they reported on the data, so then we can construct premiums by taking the average insured costs of those enrolled in a particular insurance type. Once the premiums are set, employers can make the decision whether or not they want to offer coverage and what coverage they offer to their workers. After that, individuals and families choose between all of their available insurance options, including the choice to remain uninsured. And that takes into account their spending, and importantly, that takes into account their uncompensated care. So because as they make that choice, they will have a certain They will pay for a certain amount of their care if they remain uninsured, and uncompensated care will pay for an additional amount. And that's taken into account, which is very important because, of course, the higher needs uninsured are the ones who have or other places where the uncompensated care is concentrated. So it's very important to take that into account when modeling their decisions. So then, once they make their decisions, well then, you can start over again. They've made their decisions, premiums change, and so on and so forth. And we just iterate that until the decisions settle down. Now, we simulate health reform as fully implemented in 2011 so we can compare it directly with the current state of insurance coverage. Also, we assume a uniform implementation of health reform across states. Very few states have made many implementation decisions. So not only does implementing it different ways in different states confuse the comparisons, but it's mostly guesswork at this point because very few states have committed themselves in many ways. Also, immigration status is crucial to a lot of these results. And we impute it based on Jeff Pissell's methodology, sort of the standard in that. And Jeff Pissell actually started working on that methodology when he was at the Urban Institute. Okay. Now, for more details on the model and a full bibliography of what we've done using it, you can see healthpolicycenter.org. And those are the two most recent papers. One on the basic health program option, and another on costs and savings, because the ACA builds in some savings to states as well as costs due to the Medicaid expansion. That's at least pre-super committee. Okay, so now let's start looking at the results. Now, first, health insurance would reduce the uninsured by more than half. So without reform, almost 43 million uninsured adults, non-elderly adults. Post-reform, that would go down to a little bit below 19 million. So a reduction of significantly more than half of the adults. For children, 8 million uninsured without, about 4.7 million with. And that's somewhat less than half. The reason why is that's less than half is CHIP. With a much higher income eligibility. Okay, there will be significant regional and state variation in the change in the uninsured rate. So if we look at the regions, the top line, the percent of the non-elderly, that's essentially the figures that we saw before, but as a percent of the non-elderly. So we'd see the uninsured rate would drop from about 19% to less than 9%, which is more than a 10% percentage point change. Looking at the regions, we see that the New England, the Middle Atlantic, Mountain and Pacific regions would see their uninsured rates decline by half or somewhat less than half, whereas the other regions, it would decline by more than half. So we see some very definite region patterns and some very definite state patterns. So if we look at it state by state, so the darker colors mean the largest percentage point drops in the uninsured. So we see, not surprisingly, the really light colored state of Massachusetts. Well, their uninsured rate is so low already, and they already have a health reform that has similar pieces to the ACA. So they would see no significant change in their uninsured. All other states would see a significant change. And we see a very, very definite regional pattern of those dark colors through the south and into the west. Okay, now income distribution of the uninsured. Now this slide says adults, that's incorrect. This is for all non-elderly still. There's a typo on that slide. Okay, so looking nationwide, more than half of the uninsured after reform would have incomes less than 138% of poverty. Now there are a couple important groups that that breaks down into. One, those are those eligible for Medicaid but not enrolled, and we'll see more about them. Two, undocumented immigrants, who tend to have very low incomes, as we will see. And third, a much smaller group, legal immigrants resident less than 5 years, who are barred from Medicaid, but would be eligible for subsidized coverage in the exchanges. So those three groups are that less than 138. Now an additional 35% of the uninsured would be between 138 and 400. Now that doesn't necessarily mean that they would be eligible for subsidized coverage, because they could have an offer of coverage deemed affordable. We'll see more about that. So some of these would have access to subsidized coverage, others would have an affordable offer of coverage. And there would be also more undocumented in this category. Then we see a residual higher income uninsured, about 14% of the uninsured. So the so that higher income uninsured, now they're important because they can be very high cost. That's that is down from there are fewer of them under reform than pre-reform, but that is due largely to the individual mandate. Without the individual mandate, those higher income uninsured will not go down. In fact, they may go up slightly. Okay, now we see considerable regional variation in here. So let's look at, as an example of some of the factors that are involved, let's look at two regions here, New England and West South Central. So we see, well, a huge difference in the number, but for direct comparison, let's look at those percentages. So the main difference between these two is that we have significantly less below 138 in New England and more greater than 400. So some of the factors that contribute to this, first of all, New England has a much higher income distribution than the West South Central region. If you look at the undocumented, there are many more in that West South Central region. The uninsured rates you start off with are much higher in the West South Central region. And most of the New England states have significant Medicaid programs that have income-based thresholds for adults and adult non-parents. So there's more existing Medicaid eligibility, particularly for adults in that region. So those are some of the factors that explain a lot of this variation. Those are certainly the most important factors. Okay, now let's focus on uninsured adults. So we'll break them down into five categories. First of all, those who are eligible for Medicaid or CHIP, we focused on adults. Those who are eligible for Medicaid, but I'm so used to linking the two together. Those who are eligible for Medicaid but not actually enrolled. That's 36.5%, nearly two-fifths of the uninsured. Granted, there are a high percentage of the current uninsured as well, but so then the next largest group are undocumented immigrants who would be uninsured, and that's nearly a quarter of the uninsured. And we'll see more about them in a moment. Now, of the rest, under the individual mandate in health reform, you're exempt from the mandate if you don't have an offer of affordable coverage. And we'll see exactly what that means in a moment. So 16% of the uninsured would be exempt from the individual mandate because they had no offer of coverage that's deemed affordable under the law. So these are the ones that it's going to be rather hard to reach because they're not eligible for Medicaid. And there's really not much pushing them to change their current coverage decision. Some of them will be will be eligible for subsidized coverage that will be a bit more affordable, but there really isn't a big motive pushing them to change their behavior, and outreach will not necessarily reach them. Of the remainder, these are those who under the law would have some offer of coverage that was deemed affordable. 7.5% would be eligible for subsidized coverage in the exchanges, and the remaining 15% would not be eligible for subsidized coverage, but would have a private coverage option that was deemed affordable. And we'll look at the characteristics of each of these five groups in a second. But let's define some of these terms under the law and actually as they've been modified under the regs that have been very recently issued. So for the exemption to the mandate, an adult non-dependent is exempt from the individual mandate if the lowest available single insurance premium is greater than 8% of family modified adjusted gross income. Okay, family premiums don't factor into this. Now, as far as the dependents, it's expected that the IRS regs that are due to come out very soon will treat dependents rather differently than some of the standard interpretations of the law. It's not clear exactly what that will be, but this is papers focused on adults. It's expected that it will exempt dependents if the family premium is greater than 8% of income. So exactly what that means, and that hasn't officially come out yet. So there's a big question mark on dependents and the exemption to the mandate right now. Now, to be eligible for subsidized coverage in the health benefits exchanges, you have to be legally resident, ineligible for any form of public coverage, and have income less than 400% of poverty. Note that if you're a legally resident immigrant, resident less than 5 years, you could be eligible for exchange coverage below that 138% of poverty. So that's why I did not say 138 to 400, because there are some below who could be eligible. Now, the last one is that you can't have an offer of affordable coverage. Now, what that means, and this is as defined in the draft regulation that came out in August. So no one in your family can be offered single coverage. So again, you're comparing single premium with family income. And if that single premium is less than 9.5% of family income for anyone in the family, then the family is barred from access to subsidized coverage. That's how it's interpreted in the draft regs. Okay, since that's not really what people naturally think of when you give the one sentence description of what affordable coverage is, I thought that needed a little bit more explanation because that is complicated. Now, let's look at how these five groups differ from each other. Overall, about half of the remaining uninsured would be singles without dependents. Median age would be about 37, and the median income would be about $20,000. So for those eligible for Medicaid, adults eligible for Medicaid but not enrolled, nearly 60% would be singles without dependents. They would be significantly younger. And it's obvious that their incomes would have to be low. That doesn't really tell you much that isn't obvious. But the 60% that are single with no dependents is not necessarily obvious. Now, among undocumented immigrants, we see that a majority of them are in multi-person families. They're still fairly young, and their incomes are actually quite low, a median income of about $19,000. In fact, 53% of the uninsured undocumented would be below 138% of poverty. Now, this is important because that means that a majority of these uninsured undocumented immigrants, would be otherwise eligible for Medicaid except for their immigration status, which would mean that Medicaid would be able to cover their emergency care costs. So taken with the previous item, more than half of the uninsured after reform, Medicaid would be relevant to their costs in some way. Okay, so of those who would qualify for an exemption to the individual mandate because they would have no offer of affordable coverage, we see that there are about half singles with no dependents and half multi-person families. We also see that their age is much higher. Now, the reason for that is that under the ACA, premiums in the non-group market can still vary by age. So the premiums in the exchange that would be, if you don't have subsidized coverage, the premiums in the exchange faced by the oldest can be up to three times the premiums faced by the youngest. So it's no surprise that that older people would pass this affordability test or fail this affordability test at a much higher rate. Now those who would have an affordable offer of subsidized coverage, they are overwhelmingly singles without dependents, and they're fairly young. And well, obviously their incomes have to be below 400% of poverty. And they're mostly single, so that median family income of 36 is expected. Now the last group that has an affordable, unsubsidized option, the vast majority of them are in multi-person families. They're somewhat older, and their incomes are much higher. So that 14% of the uninsured that's above 400%. Most of them are falling into this group, though not all of them are above 400%, but most of them are falling into this group. So this is the higher income uninsured. Okay, so again we see very significant state and regional variation, and I'm glad these presentations have been extended, because in the original 18-minute time frame I wouldn't have had any time to deal with. To deal with the variation at all. So the 25, 16, 8, and 15% are what we saw in the previous pie chart. So we see, let's do another comparison of two regions as we did before. So we see New England versus the West South Central. So we see, the most dramatic difference is in the undocumented immigrants. You know, that share is much higher in the West South Central, and we see a higher share with the affordability exemption in New England. So some of the main factors are similar to the factors that we saw before. New England, the states generally have very high current Medicaid eligibility and enrollment for adults, particularly adult non-parents, whereas in the West South Central, many of them have no income-based eligibility for adults except the old TANF thresholds for adult parents. There's also ESI is much more prevalent in the New England region. ESI being employer-sponsored coverage. It's much more readily available in New England than West South Central. And with those two together, lead to lower current uninsured rates in New England and higher current uninsured rates in West South Central. We've seen the income distribution. And with the affordability exemption, the New England region has fairly high per capita healthcare costs relative to some other regions. They have an older population, for example. And the West South Central region has a much higher share of uninsured or undocumented uninsured. So that's sort of an example. So these types of factors explain not just these two differences, but many of the state and regional differences in the paper. These are the most important factors. And in other things like other details of, so the current Medicaid eligibility for adults is very important, and sometimes that doesn't follow regions. I mean, there are some states like Arizona which have higher eligibility for adults than their surrounding states and certain states like that that stick out from their regions. Okay, now state by state. So here are the largest states, and for example, we see immediately a glaring difference between New York, 45% of the uninsured eligible for Medicaid, and 16% undocumented, with say Texas or Florida. So part of that is that New York definitely has a number of undocumented immigrants, but as a share of the population, they're lower than California, Texas, and Florida. Also, New York has existing eligibility for adults, the Family Health Plus program for adult non-parents up to 133 and adult parents up to 150. So this Medicaid expansion isn't such an expansion for the state of New York. Okay, so now let's look at this a slightly different way. So what share of the uninsured would be eligible for Medicaid or subsidized coverage in the exchanges? So these are the uninsured who are potentially reachable by outreach. So for some states, the sample size, cutting the uninsured by, the sample size was just not large enough for us to give reliable results. Massachusetts, for example, there are so few uninsured to begin with that once you start cutting them down finer, you very quickly get into sample size problems. But we see, it's sort of interesting, it's almost the inverse of the map that we saw before, declines in the uninsured. So some of these factors are, again, existing Medicaid eligibility for adults. Most of the states in this category actually have existing programs on that. And that means they're not newly eligible. They were eligible before, and those who have chosen not to enroll, there's going to be less of an incentive for them to change their decisions than those who had no choice before. And some of the other factors that we've talked about are also relevant here. Okay, so in conclusion, health reform will reduce the number of uninsured nationally by more than half. But that still means about 23 million uninsured remaining. So safety net providers will still face a challenge of the uninsured and uncompensated care. And we've seen that there's substantial variation by region and by state. And of course, a safety net provider would have to be also concerned about local variation. So hopefully during this next year, we're going to integrate our model with the American Community Survey more so we can get more detailed results and actually get some sub-state variation. So at this time, that was not possible. Because the ACS is a good survey, but it's a very new survey. And in order to get that much sample size, they had to reduce the number of questions considerably. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to get it to to get what we need out of it. Okay, so about two-fifths of the, as we've seen, about two-fifths of the non-elderly adults of the uninsured would be Medicaid eligible. A quarter would be undocumented immigrants. And just over half of these would have incomes less than 138% of poverty. So the remainder, you see about 16% would qualify for an exemption to the mandate, and their behavior would not change that much. And the remainder would have some offer of coverage that's deemed affordable. And we've seen some of the most important factors that explain variation between regions and states. The income distribution, Medicaid eligibility and enrollment for adults, adult non-parents in particular, the current uninsured rate, availability of employer-sponsored coverage, which varies considerably from state to state, particularly from the small firm market, the prevalence of undocumented immigrants, and healthcare costs relative to other states. So that's all I had.